afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Dave Allen, is joining us today, and it is Monday, July 1st, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy July 1st, Melody.
Yes, it is. And just as a reminder, I know all the listeners know that we have Independence Day this Thursday, so we will be playing a replay of one of the programs. Unless Pastor Butch wants to do a live one, he certainly may, but most likely it will be a replay, a rebroadcast from one of our earlier shows. So I want to thank you for joining us today, and you should make sure you get to the website today and sign up to our newsletter. And I've got a little information in there today on the 4th of July celebration with a little bit of history, traditions. There's a link there that you can actually go to and refresh your memory and read, of course, the Declaration of Independence. So, and also some tips on how to properly display your flag come this Thursday. So, with that said, Dave, howdy, howdy.
Melody, back at you.
Oh, it's been a hectic day here, and we're going to get to the gold prices today, and I'm sure everyone knows about the little bit of pressure, and I've told you, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to see some pullbacks as it is going into the holiday. Of course, the stock market didn't do as well as what the futures were saying it was going to do early this morning. They were talking about a 200-point plus uptick in the Dow. I don't believe we saw that. Gold today, pressure down 25 at $1,384. Silver's down 18 at $1,521. Platinum was down $4 at $835. And today, palladium was the only one to the green, up 14 at $1,555. The USDX today is up 0.62 at 96.82. Crude oil was up 0.71 at 59.18. Let's just see what those paper markets did today. Didn't have a chance to follow them. Just once in a while, I took a peek at them. Oh, come on. Bring them up here, computer. Any day now. Any minute, any day. Well, the Dow was up triple digits. It was up 117, but a far cry from the 250 they were expecting earlier today, 26,717, and it struggled at that. The NASDAQ was up 84 points at 8,091. The S&P was up 2,964. 10-year yield popped just a little bit, 0.03. At 2.03%. As of Friday, it was holding that 2% level. Pressure on the euro. And Japan was up huge, I'm sure, with that coming out of the G20. You kind of expected to see that big plus as, you know, all the great leaders over there, shaking hands, making deals, and lying. You know, it's just par for the course of what we've come to expect from all of the great world leaders. And, you know, it truly was a little bit of a joke just watching some of it and so forth. It's just like, you know, it's, I don't know. It's, but what's interesting, I think the next G20 meeting, Dave, is in the Saudis. Saudi Arabia is holding.
It could very well be that we see a lot less participants. I would expect some boycotts of that one.
Very well. We could very much well see that. And I do have a report there that I don't know. I didn't bring it to your attention, but how the Saudis are buying up U.S. treasuries. And it really is interesting because all the dots are connected. And we get that we had this special relationship with them coming out of the Nixons with a, you know, closing of the window, the petrodollar being created and so forth. I get that. But I don't think anybody really, I mean, there's so much of it is hidden. What I didn't know, Dave, from reading this one report, was what the Saudis held in treasuries was private, was secret. No one really knows how much treasuries they're truly holding. And it was only recently that I think it was Bloomberg that had applied for the, you know, the privacy, you know, the public info. What do you, I can't recall, you know, but where they actually opened the door. But because they buy so many of the treasuries behind, you know, other central banks and, you know, so forth, no one really knows exactly how many treasuries that they hold. But their recent buying of treasuries has skyrocketed since Trump has taken office. And based on the latest reported figures, they nearly doubled its ownership of treasuries to $177 billion. Now, yeah, that's not trillions of dollars like, you know, China, Japan, and so forth. But we see them. But again, we don't know how many they do have. And well, no major foreign creditor has ramped up its lending to the U.S. any faster.
Yeah, well, at that rate, $177 billion would place them in 11th place as the 11th most foreign holder of U.S. debt. We'll talk about the top 10 later on in the program, but very interesting.
Well, then I'll finish this report at that time. Yeah, we've seen countries like China and Russia, their treasuries, they're falling back, they're shrinking, particularly Russia. And then you have the, and then you can see all the relationships with, it's kind of interesting. But let's get back to the stocks today. And of course, supposedly there's a trade truce. I mean, isn't anybody getting tired of this, you know, one week on, next week off, all the threats, this happening and that happening, and it's not going to get any, who knows when this is going to get done, but certainly the markets like it, it's reactive, and that's what they like about it. So they jumped, the markets jumped today. They said that they were going to, President Trump said they were going to hold off slapping additional tariffs on Chinese products, hopefully to resume trade talks. We saw gold fall. And so, you know, it took the correction in gold today below $1,400 for the first time in over a week. And we've still seen gold up 6.6% in June and 10% for the year. And it just has risen just shy of 14% over the past year. So all in all, gold is doing very good considering all the pressure and you know, when paper markets do well, gold usually does bad. But again, that's pressure on the dollar.
Yeah, indeed. You know, we're reading that Presidents Trump and Xi Jinping agreed not to impose new levies on U.S. and Chinese goods after they met in the sidelines of the G20 summit in Osaka, Japan on Saturday. Trump said the meeting went well, or at least as well as it could have, and noted that we are right back on track. Well, actions will speak louder than words, but you know, the Chinese state-run news outlet the Xinhua said the two leaders agreed to restart trade consultations between their countries on the basis of equality and mutual respect. Trump added that the U.S. will ease restrictions on American companies from selling products to Huawei. It's the, of course, the giant telecommunications company from China. We'll have more on that in a few minutes too. And also said China would buy more farm product. So, still a number of analysts and economists at one of the too big to fail, Morgan Stanley, said there's no immediate escalation, but still no clear path towards any comprehensive deal. Hence, our, meaning Morgan Stanley, our overarching conclusion is that developments over the weekend on their own don't do enough to remove the uncertainty created by trade tensions. Don't sell your gold yet, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, do just the opposite.
Well, you know, we never get the details, because I figured the details are never there. These are just promises. And, you know, we did back off of Huawei. I saw an article where Japan said that they weren't going to secure any more foreign products, that they're buying enough. But to me, that report didn't seem right, because you'd think that, you know, if we're going to, you know, give concessions to Huawei, you know, that China would have to give something too. But I guess that's not always the case. And we'll have to see what other reports come out after all of this mess. But it seems to me, Dave, it's the same old thing. It's same old, same old. What has changed?
The calendar.
Yes. And unfortunately, that's changing too quickly. But I guess, again, this comes off the going into a long holiday weekend, that, you know, they'll bring out everything they can in order to make everybody happy. And, of course, this month is marking the largest period of time the U.S. economy has gone without a recession. Well, that should make you all feel comfortable. And certainly just edging past the economic cycle that ended when the dot-com bubble burst back in 2001. So this is a milestone. And there's some pessimistic moments in the last decade. And, you know, it's we see some significant slowdown in growth. A lot of economists are out there now warning. Also about a recession that is coming. And thanks to the impact of global trade tensions and slumping growth in other economies across the globe, this is why they see these recessions coming. The pace of growth has been significantly slower than its predecessors, of course, making the length of the cycle the defining factor of this period. So signs of over-exuberance, well, they've ended the past three economic cycles. And
Yeah, well, the bottom line, I mean, low interest rates that helped prop up the economy over the past decade, probably going lower in the coming months. Bottom line, again, economic cycles don't die of old age. Still, as people worry that a recession is just around the corner, simply because there hasn't been a recession in a while, that could weigh on consumer and business confidence even further. And the fear of a recession could indeed become a self-fulfilling prophecy. We'll have more on the difference between experts' view on the economy and those of everyday Americans later in today's program, Melody.
Well, you know, this always amazes me, and it just goes to show how bad things really are. Like, we should be rejoicing that, you know, we haven't had the collapse yet. But the amount of bonds with negative yields, we've talked about this off and on, have grown to more than $13 trillion. This is data from the Institute of International Finance. And unlike in 2016, the amount of debt below zero looks poised to grow. And we've had, ever since the European Central Bank President Mario Draghi had signaled the central bank is looking to further ease its already negative interest rate policy, bond yields have been dropping below zero across Europe. What did you expect them to happen? You know, investors are trying to find other places to put their cash. Interest in so-called alternative assets is pushing banks to launch brand new $100 billion divisions. Institutional holdings of money market funds have surged in recent weeks to a record high of $1.68 trillion. But you still have money that's piling into the bonds that charge instead of pay bondholders interest. It just baffles me. Negative yields, I guess when you know, negative yields are primarily in government bonds from Japan and some European countries. So.
Yep, indeed. Just real briefly, as we'll be heading into a break in a couple of minutes, aside from gold, it's been bonds, as Melody just mentioned, not stocks, that have drawn major investment this year, and municipal bonds in particular, thing we don't talk about that often, has shown particularly large and consistent inflows. They're a slower and sleepier asset class, often preferred by retirees and risk-intolerant savers. Well, muni bonds saw record inflows during the first quarter. The flows were spurred by the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, the 2017 tax cuts, individual and corporate, plus a reduction in municipal bond issuance and the Fed's U-turn on interest rate policy, which has seen rates drop. Now, let's see. The drop in interest rates has brought muni bond net fund inflows to almost $37 billion. That's already the third largest annual net inflow over the muni bond fund group and the highest this early in a year in almost three decades, Melody.
Wow. Let's see. We want to talk a little bit about Afghan. We don't hear much about that anymore, and we probably won't have time to finish this up prior to the break. But again, the forces, Afghan security forces, are still battling the Taliban gunmen today, and we all know that we're not allowed to hear any information about Afghanistan anymore. And we'll see. We'll talk about other things that we're not allowed to know right after these few short commercials. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back. We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
They just get up another talking away. I don't know what. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, boy, I'll be happy after this week. Once my routine gets interrupted, through holidays, it's always good to get back on schedule. And so I'm looking forward to get this July 4th. And because I think things are going to get hectic after this holiday. I think it's going to go right back. When do the Feds meet again, Dave? The end of this month?
July 28th and 29th.
Oh, we won't get the we'll get the job report on Friday, right?
It's June? Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, if it was, what, 27,000 last month, you know it'll be a big number this month, I would think. You know, they just have to save face. But it's,
Well, the truth will come out next month during the revision period. That's what I've come to see now. You know, it's worth, you know, just taking the original number almost with a grain of salt until the revisions come out. Then we can we have a better idea of what kind of manipulation was going on.
You know, it's just amazing. I don't ever remember working in the having a job where if you had a deadline, you can give one report. Oh, well, 30 days later, let me revise that one.
I know.
You'd be fired. You'd be fired if you couldn't do it right the first time. You're out of here. Going into the break, we're just talking about, we don't hear much about the war in Afghanistan, but we continue to hear that these security forces are still battling the Taliban. I guess it was the Taliban gunman today that stormed a building in the capital of Kabul. There was a bomb-laden truck that exploded near the defense ministry at rush hour, injuring at least 100 people, including 35 children. For hours after the attack, there was sporadic gunfire, explosions. You could be heard in the distance. Three gunmen entered a building around the defense ministry after the blast. And, of course, the Taliban took responsibility. So things continue to go. And I guess, I don't know if we have anything on Hong Kong today.
Yeah, further.
We'll talk about the
Protests.
Yeah. So things are lively everywhere. And, but 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. And we talk about this all the time, how little savings people have. In fact, there was also a report that I was reading today about how a third of Americans say they've cut spending in the last year. And it doesn't matter. It's all the same demographics. And so they blame it for loss of household income, fears of recession, job loss, medical bills. So we've heard this, and it doesn't matter. And what's interesting, Dave, is twice as many Democrats as Republicans said they cut their spending due to anxiety over the economy. We can talk about that here in a little bit. But you wrote on our weekly American Survival newsletter that you write about this. And about how everyday Americans view the economy compared with the so-called experts.
Well, yeah, you and Butch and I bemoan on our daily financial survival programs how the views of so-called financial experts are often at odds with everyday Americans' kitchen table talk. Well, those divergent viewpoints all across the country are borne out in a new survey from Bankrate.com. While 99% of experts view today's U.S. economy as good or excellent, just 59% of everyday citizens do. 39% of the citizens view the economy as not so good or poor. So it's no surprise to readers that, you know, the economies of the U.S. and other major nations have already entered a significant slowdown. More and more of the economic numbers that we've been getting lately have been alarming. And yet so many of the experts, in quotes, continue to claim that the U.S. economy is in great shape.
Well, your survey, or you point out that the survey is, as I had mentioned going into this, how twice as many Democrats as Republicans says they're cutting their spending. So this survey also shows that perceptions of the economy depend on a person's political party registration.
Yeah, not surprisingly, in our age of bipartisan divide, about 57% more Republicans, total 77%, believe the economy is good or excellent than Democrats, 49% of them do. independents fall in between, 58%. Conversely, more than twice as many Democrats see the economy as not so good or poor as Republicans do, 49 to 23%. Again, independents fall in between. Probably even less surprising, lower income households view the economy less favorably than those with higher incomes. In households with less than $30,000 in annual income, 50% believe the economy is not so good or poor. 47% view it as good or excellent. And then economies with income of more than $75,000, 69% of them see a good or excellent economy. 30% see it as not so good or poor. You know, and then there are two income groups in between in this survey, you know, where roughly two-thirds view the economy as good or excellent, about one-third seeing it as not so good or poor.
Well, you know, the perceptions of the likelihood of recessions also differ between the experts and everyday Americans, right?
Right. Over 40% of Americans believe that a recession had either already begun or would hit in less than 6 months or within a year. Virtually all of the experts are less optimistic. 99%, in fact, see a recession hitting either within 1 to 2 years or in 2 or more years. Interestingly, 50% of Republican households say a recession won't hit until at least 1 year out, while 50% of Democratic households say a recession has either begun or will begin in less than a year. I'm guessing a lot of that has to do with wishful thinking on both sides. Here's perhaps the survey's most important finding. You alluded to it. Every American savings rates fall short of expert recommendations. In fact, 28% of households, just a little over a quarter, one quarter, say they have no savings at all. And just another 25% say they have enough to pay for a maximum of 3 months of household expenses. Only 18% say they could cover 6 months or more.
Well, you know, I don't get this because, and I mean, I do because everybody wants your money invested. They don't want you to save. They really don't want you to have savings. And you know, you hear these experts who say that a typical household should have 55% say enough to cover 3 to 5 months of expenses, 44% say 6 months or more. They just want all your money. I'm so they redefine what savings should be or what they are.
Well, yeah, I mean, Greg McBride of Bankrate.com, I mean, he reminds us that in the last recession, more than 6 million Americans were out of work longer than 6 months. So he says that translates into, you know, what we should be aiming for. That is at least six months of savings. Longer, 9 to 12 months if you're the sole, you're in a sole breadwinner household. And yet, everyday Americans just aren't comfortable with their savings. Well, 52% say their savings should be able to pay for at least 6 months of expenses. Only 18% have actually saved that much. Now, roughly the same amount of Americans, you know, think they should be able to cover 3 to 5 months of expenses. 17% actually do. More than twice the number of Americans who believe they should save enough to cover up the 3 months of expenses have actually saved just that much. And of course, again, 7% of Americans say that no savings are necessary for them to feel comfortable. Four times that many, however, 28% actually have none.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, no, save, that's what we should do. Save, save, save. And I don't think, I mean, we talk about the amount of cash people should hold, you know, and that this report doesn't say cash. It says savings. They don't want you to save because they would rather have your money into the stock market. And that's what's nice about gold. Yes, you have cash for these expenses to cover your household expenses over a certain period of time, but you put your savings into something like gold to protect it. Unless you don't want to gamble with your money, and that's what the stock markets are. It's a gambling casino. And so it's, you know, it's even Michael Snyder wrote in his economic collapse blog last week, he says, perhaps we should stop calling them experts because they appear to be completely and utterly clueless.
Well, I for one happen to agree.
Yeah, I
with
do
him.
Too.
I mean, it's not to say that the so-called experts aren't smart or don't have good intentions. I think many, if not most of them are and do. It's just that far too often, far too many of them live and socialize with members of their own socioeconomic class. In short, they're out of touch. They're out of touch with everyday Americans, particularly Americans who are less well-off than they are. That's not to say that facts aren't facts. It is to say, however, that, you know, the so-called experts, whether in government or in private business, have to do a better job of educating Americans with reality. You know, and that's what we view our mission as here on Financial Survival, as well as our, you know, blogs and newsletters. You know, Melody, we just better hope the economy can hold up a while longer, because if the survey results we just talked about, particularly for savings, are any indication, the next recession could be absolutely devastating and irreversible for millions of U.S. families.
Well, you know, that is very true. And
read the rest of the article again at dgscoins.com. It'll be coming out sometime after today's program. And
well, there's a lot of good numbers in there, and it really brings you into, you know, when we talk about the largest expansion, it doesn't mean it's a great expansion. It just means that we've expanded, and these numbers kind of put it into, they just add to the whole picture that it's just not as rosy, and that people have, like, what's wrong with them? Anyway,
But it's, you know, it's a self-destructive path.
Yeah, it is.
That we're on. And we even quote Einstein in today's article, you know, with the world debt now, $244 trillion. That just is astounding. And if Einstein's old adage is right, you know, if we keep doing the same things over and over and over, you know, and expect a different result, then perhaps we have met the insane, and it is us. So you want to prepare for the coming financial crisis, ladies and gentlemen. You want to produce a different result and stay sane in the process? Well, like Melody said just a few minutes ago, add more precious metals to your portfolio.
And you know what? The world as a whole owes $244 trillion, but our unfunded liabilities is $77. CBO even reported, what, $200 trillion. So you add them into the mix, and it's just like these, and that's just the U.S. Who knows what these other unfunded liabilities are in other countries and so forth. I mean, you're talking about numbers that are just... We will all have to move to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is kind of interesting, Dave. Deutsche Bank, they're looking to slash their workforce by 20,000, by more than a fifth. And it's the biggest makeover that they're looking to do in years. And, of course, there's been always a lot of discussions that Deutsche Bank was about ready to go belly up somehow. You know, they're not going to let Deutsche Bank go belly up until they're ready for it to go belly up. So they're looking to do their restructuring plan as early as this week. It has the decision hasn't been formally adopted yet, and the number may yet change. The lender's annual general meeting in May, the CEO, Christian Sewing, said that he was working on tough cutbacks after he started to walk away from the merger talks with domestic rival Commerce Bank in April. So, I don't know. Deutsche Bank had 91,500 staff at the end of the first quarter, down from 95,400 when he took over, and they're going to make these formal announcements no later than July 8th.
Yeah, next Monday. And, you know, we see that this restructuring likely to hit the bank's investment banking division the hardest, particularly in the U.S., as well as trading equities and interest rate derivatives, which is a good thing in my book. I mean, I hate to think of the folks who are going to likely be losing their jobs, but, you know, in terms of banking practices, boy, this derivative thing, just people haven't learned a lesson from the Great Recession of over 10 years ago.
But, you know, they're doing the same thing as BOA did.
Sure.
They set up a different unit to take all of their toxic assets, you know, assign it to taxpayers. So if they do go belly up, guess who gets to pay for it? The taxpayers. So they're doing the same thing. They're going to take all these toxic derivatives and you know, put them in a separate thing and, you know, try to wind it down or sell them or whatever. But who's going to buy them? You have to have a buyer if you're going to sell them. So, you know, it's the same old thing. And again, they're not going to let Deutsche Bank fail until they're ready for it to fail. You know, just like they did with Bear Stearns and Lehman. So, and we're going to talk about the central banks, their lack of tools to boost their economies, even after the United States' longest expansion ever. We'll be right back to talk about these things right after these few short commercials. Tell me again tonight.
Each and every heart is food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com. Today.
Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm co-host Dave Allen here with Melody today, who will be with us back with us in just a few short seconds, attending to some other business as we speak. Central banks, we're reading, just in general, lacking the tools this time around to boost their economies. You know, roughly a decade after the global financial crisis, in the first decade of the new millennium, central banks around the world may not have much left in their toolkits. That's according to the head of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD. Angel Gurria, the Secretary General, made that comment on Friday as major central banks like the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank recently signaled their readiness to continue cutting interest rates, or in the case of the U.S., to begin cutting interest rates. That dovish term came amid the ongoing trade war between the U.S. and China, which many economists continue to warn could derail an already slowing global economy. Gurria said that the world would be much worse off today without central banks working to stimulate economic activity in the past decade. However, central banks have simply run out of ammunition. You know, interest rates are at zero practically everywhere, or very close, he added, and now we know interest rates are going to remain low for longer. That is as much as the central banks can do. He said that at the G20 summit over the weekend. And he said it's time that fiscal policies play a bigger part in boosting economic activity, which means that countries can afford to spend more without jeopardizing their finances to do so. You know, some countries, of course, are taking care of their debt, he reminds us, but some countries that do have the capacity to actually spend more in a controlled fashion. So coordinated fiscal policy, he says, is the next stage. Our gross national debt is already exceeding $22.4 trillion. Annual deficits are now projected to be near, at, or over $1 trillion each year over the next decade. So it's certainly questionable how effective U.S. fiscal policy will be in dealing with the next, might I say, coming recession. More on that another day. I think I hear Melody back with us. Melody?
Yes, I am back. Thank you for doing that. And, it's fascinating to see what's going on with Hong Kong as you see all these pictures with the protesters, how they're smashing the windows out of the Hong Kong's legislature, and they stormed the building today. I don't know how many thousands, hundreds of thousands. I mean, they've had millions shown up, demonstrators, as they take to the streets on the 22nd anniversary of the former British colony's handover to China. And since the July 1st handover in 1997, the citizens of Hong Kong, a special administrative region of China, have been rallying every year to demand for democracy. But again, experts had warned this year's march might attract more people after the protests that had started early in June. So, and of course, this is the anger toward the government's proposed extradition bill. Now, this controversial law would pave the way for people arrested in Hong Kong to stand trial in mainland China. Yeah, I wouldn't want to go there either to stand trial. So yeah. I don't blame them at all, Dave.
For sure. Well, it looks as though police are estimating 1,500 protesters had been gathered near the Hong Kong government headquarters when 100 riot police confronted them, beating some with batons, using pepper spray on others to help disperse the crowd. Let's see. The larger crowds, a separate group of Hong Kong protesters rallied yesterday and today in support of local police and Beijing for trying to maintain order in that city.
Well, Europe is scrambling to keep the Iran a nuclear agreement, and James Corbett hit on this quite a bit on Friday's program, and the European officials said they had created a trading vehicle to help Iran get some relief from the U.S. sanctions. but Tehran may see the proposal as insufficient to stop it from moving forward with a threat to violate its nuclear deal. And the remaining parties to the nuclear deal that has been abandoned by the U.S. last year have been scrambling to find a way to keep Iran from leaving the agreement. But Iran had said it would continue with its plan to enrich uranium, even though it has now breached the volume that violates nuclear accord. And that's what James Corbett was talking about. He says they, because of the sanctions, they can't eliminate what they have, so it's just stockpiling. So it's not like they want to breach the volume, but it's they can't get rid of the stockpiles due to the sanctions that were placed on them. So, you know, what's a country to do? Kind of interesting there, Dave. But
keep on stockpiling.
Yes, but you know, getting back to the states, farmers trying to adapt to the wettest year since 1895. You know, we've talked about the farmers, how so many of them are going out of business. The suicide rates for farmers are increasing. They're having a lot of time with all this flooding that they've had. They can't plant their crops. The insurance, they can't get insurance because they're past the planting dates that allows them to get the insurance. So they're just getting it from every side imaginable. And then you have China, of course, is backed off. So I don't know how they can increase their buying when our crops aren't there to be purchased. So I'm not quite sure how. So I just continue to see rising prices. But, you know, since 1895 day, the wettest 12 months since that time. And now the U.S. farmers have plans to adapt next year to what some forecasters say may be an increasingly soggy new normal for this nation, so for America's midsection. Now, this plan includes bigger and faster tractors to speed up planting, quick growing seeds, which means GMOs, I would think, which is not good. More extensive use of cover crops. Drainage tiles to keep the flooding fields intact. But the thing of it is, they don't have the money. I mean, how expensive are these tractors? The short season seeds have lower yields. Cover crops and tiling take time and effort. It's great ideas, but most of these farmers can't afford that. Your big farmers, your corporate farmers can. And again, that's what's going to happen to the little farmer. But so you've had these farmers that have been locked in a give and take tussle with the weather. These trends that are tracked by scientists and forecasters over decades suggest that the rains and wild storms, the delayed planting times this year could be something that's going to be the same.
Yeah, pretty amazing stuff. I mean, what used to be a 1 in 100 or 1 in 500 year event? It's going to become much, much more common, is, in fact. These 1 in 100 and 500 year storms, rainstorms, are, you know, coming every year, every other year. And it's wreaking havoc on these poor farmers. Not just them, but this is what this article happens to be about. Now, you know, the regional rains, you know, part of an increasing trend over the last 40 years. And just more and more moisture in the midsection of the country. From June of last year, you know, to May of this year, the contiguous U.S. suffered through its wettest 12 months, as Melody said, going back to the late 1800s when the federal government first began keeping formal records. And for months, this relentless succession of storms left fields unplanted, highway and rail traffic, you know, all tied up, barges struggling with fierce river currents, you know, when they could even move at all. There's a senior scientist at Woods Hole Research Center in Massachusetts, Jennifer Francis, blames the Midwest deluge on, you know, reduced ice cover on the Bering Strait. you know, two high pressure systems increase the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere and lock these rainstorms in place. Meanwhile, farmers are trying to do what they always have, and that's adapt. Now, how well they'll be able to continue doing it, especially as Melody said, you know, if these rains continue year after year, crop harvests getting smaller, farm equipment necessary to do what needs to be done getting more expensive. It's a vicious cycle that it just appears is going to make it increasingly difficult for particularly the small family farmer to stay afloat, literally and figuratively.
Well, 1 year does not make a trend. Hopefully, a lot of these, you know, hopefully they're wrong and, you know, they can get back to, you know, what they do best, you know. But
hear.
Yeah, so maybe all of these experts in the weather area are the same as the experts in the financial area.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I know you'd started talking about foreign holders of debt in Saudi Arabia, you know, quickly inching its way up $177 billion. But China's still the largest foreign owner of U.S. debt. You want to start there, Melody?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, we know that, you know, we're not talking about the unfunded liabilities. We're not talking about, you know, this is what we're talking about, the numbers that are given to us, the $22 trillion, the U.S. national debt, $22.4 trillion. The total amount of debt held by the public is $14.7 trillion. On that total, the amount of treasuries issued to foreign countries is $6.4 trillion. So China still holds the most U.S. debt, owing to a variety of factors, and of course its desire to keep its fiat yuan weak compared to the dollar. So most of the treasury securities held by other countries are in the form of longer-term treasury notes and bonds rather than the treasury bills. So the top five countries in the visualization is the China, Japan, Brazil, United Kingdom, and Ireland. It's interesting to see Ireland in there account for almost half of the treasury securities held by foreign countries. You have, do you want to list those top 10?
Oh, sure. Top 10, and then Melody wants to finish up with Saudi Arabia, which is just out of that measure. But China on top, $1.113 trillion. Japan, fairly close behind at $1.064 trillion. Brazil, a distant third with roughly $307 billion. The UK, just under $301 billion. Ireland, $270 billion. The Swiss with $227 billion. Little old Luxembourg, $224 billion. Good for them. Talk about savers. Cayman Islands, 217.2. Now that's an interesting. Wonder if they're purchasing on behalf of anybody, Melody.
Governments.
Hong Kong, $206 billion, and number 10, Belgium, with just south of $180 billion.
And, you know, we had mentioned about this, the Saudis, how they're aggressively increasing their U.S. government debt. And, you know, they cut back in 2016, which I think is, you know, interesting. But they have amassed an even larger position since Trump's election in November of this of 2016. Based on the latest reported figure, the nation nearly doubled its ownership of treasuries to $177 billion. As I mentioned earlier in the program, rising petro dollar revenue, risk aversion, a shift out of negative yielding bonds, and considering how big the U.S. deficit has grown because of Trump's tax cuts, the amounts involved won't move the needle all that much when it comes to America's financing needs. So whatever the case may be, we have seen the relationship between Trump, Kushner, and the Prince Mohammed in the face of growing criticism on a whole bunch of issues. You can go from the Saudi-led war in Yemen. You can see the tensions between the U.S. and Iran, how that's escalating. And these numbers really do stand out from the end of October 2016, the last month before Trump's election, through April of that year. Saudi Arabia upped its ownership of treasuries from $97 billion to $177
billion. Wow, double.
The 83% jump was by far the biggest among the top 12 foreign creditors in percentage terms. So it's really fascinating. And yes, Yemen is a big deal. We've seen Trump, they've tried to stop the funding, the arms sales to Saudi Arabia to support the Yemen war. Everything has been vetoed, and we continue to do that. And it really is, I might put this in next week's issue of our newsletter, because it really is fascinating to see the relationship with this country, and it is a dangerous country to grow. We're out of time. Holy smokes. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom. You're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.